can't believe he paused the thing.
He didn't pause it.
He didn't?
It's still recording.
He's just going to cut it off?
He'll cut it off.
Oh, my God. Elliot's...
It's all right. It's not a big...
Stop the show to go yell at the magpies. I was like, did he pause it? Mike was like, no.
No, we're
He's
going.
He's just going to cut it off.
All right, so we're going to move now.
Hello, and welcome to episode number 140 of the High Level Showdown. My name is Elliot Tanti. I'm here with Sharon and Michael, and we are proud members of the Alberta Podcast Network, which is powered, of course, by ATB. Hey guys, how's it going?
Great.
Great.
You know, I always worry at the top of the show that one of us is going to forget to say that very important part of the introduction that we're powered by ATB.
You know, I always throw it after the names just to see your reaction, because there's this always this look of surprise like he forgot. Yeah. But no.
Well, you know, Elliot, of course, is known as One Take Tanti.
Yeah, One Take Tanti. That's right.
I'm like, so, I'm five takes.
Five takes Sharon. Yeah.
Yeah. 70 takes Sharon.
Yeah. We should have a blooper reel of how many times I have to record the opening when I do it.
And she just said, nope.
Anyway, we always get through it. We always get into the show, and that's fine. So this week we are lamenting about kind of how boring the week was in politics.
So it's like, boring.
It's like, I don't know. There's just not a lot going on. But Michael, one story did catch your eye, and it involves the leader of the opposition here in Alberta, Jason Kenney, and his travels. So why don't you talk a little bit about this?
Well,
Jason
Kenney travels to India and, of course, meets up with lawmakers and officials in India. And there's a lot of hypocrisy, of course, with many opposition parties who criticize governments. And then when they are in power, or sometimes not even in power yet, they end up doing the same things that they've criticized governments for. So, you know, Jason Kenney's trip to India was attacked by the government this time. So the government attacking the opposition about, you know, just the expenses and the meaning of this trip. And, you know, Jason Kenney sort of going over there, presenting himself as, you know, the government of Alberta when he's not that quite yet.
Yeah, I mean, I think that there is a good story in the Edmonton Journal by Elise Stolte that sort of highlighted some of the confusion, including a member of the Indian government referring to Jason Kenney as the Honourable Minister.
Yeah.
From Alberta, which is kind of interesting, and obviously someone didn't do their homework. That communications professional in India didn't do their homework before they tweeted.
But
out
Jason
that photo.
Kenney didn't want to correct the Indian politician, right? Of course, he'd love to be called the Honourable Minister, or maybe they're referring to his time in Ottawa. So he is an Honourable Minister. I mean, that's how I would spin it if I was in Kenny's camp.
And that's kind of how they have spun it. I thought it was the most interesting thing about this was the line about how Jason Kenney was touting our competitive energy prices and great fertile area for investment while he was in India. Well, of course,
and that,
saying,
Alberta was going to hell.
So that was sort of funny too. I mean, I guess like for me, I am less worked up with. See, I don't know, because I think part of me is like, well, you know, he's misrepresenting his position. He's trying to garner attention for a job that he does not yet have. But then there's another side of me that just sort of says, like, who the hell cares? He's a representative of Alberta. He is the official leader of the opposition. He is, quote unquote, premier in waiting.
But wasn't there on official opposition business?
That was the big issue. And Michael, or Sherry, can you get into the expense bits around this? Because this is where
I
lost got me.
Because I don't know. So, it sounded very complicated when I was reading it, and I was like, hopefully someone else explains this on the show.
Michael, my understanding is that official opposition trips need to be approved by the Speaker's office if they're done on a government dime. I don't think this was approved by a speaker, but I also don't think it was done on government dime. In fact, the party, I think, later commented that this was came out of the party's coffers, this trip.
Which is also somehow not completely, not legal, but, like, it's not encouraged or something.
Or above board.
Yeah, above board is the right word. It was a little murky, basically, on how they paid for this trip. You know, I think I agree with you, Elliot. In the grand scheme of things, it's like, who cares? I do think it is a little misleading when he goes there on official status. And for what? Like, A, right now, as opposition leader, well, I mean, some people can argue, like, oh, yeah, he's building these relationships. Well, the election's a few months away. Yeah. Arguably, Jason Kenney's going to win. And he'll have plenty of time to build these relationships. I think it was last week, Elliot, when you said an opposition or whoever it is shouldn't be infringing on, you know, this. I think it was in regards to the PC conservatives talking about Trudeau and NAFTA and blah, 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 blah. And I think it's not exactly the same thing, but kind of in the similar vein where not that what Jason Kenney's doing is, you know, detrimental to the Notley government, but I don't think it helps the Notley government. And I think it does cause confusion. I don't think it's appropriate. I think if we can talk about what is appropriate, mm-hmm. I don't think it's appropriate. But at the end of the day, I mean, I'm more inclined to shrug my shoulders on this and be like, classic Kenney.
I mean, I think the quote that sort of sums it up best is the one from Brian Mason, who, yes, is still around. Kenny is either there or
not.
Not,
not for very long, though. I mean,
excuse me, retiring. He is my MLA guy.
Not for very much longer. Wow. Kenny is either there on an approved trip as the leader of the official opposition, in which case he's not entitled to take outside money to be funded by partisan donations, or he's going there as a private individual and not doing government business. But he can't have it both ways.
Yeah.
So I think that's what you were alluding to earlier mm-hmm. around that. I mean, I think the difference between what was going on with the NAFTA negotiations last week and this is that he's not undercutting the NDP directly in that sort of situation. But he certainly, I mean, he met with some government officials. Who knows,
like,
what they talked about.
Did he just
want
to go to India? Thing too. Like, we don't, like, what was the point of this? What did they talk about? Do we have records?
He just wanted to talk about Alberta's
maybe
power prices.
Listen, I'm going to be the head of this government in about a year's time. So, you know, get to know me, all right? Because, you know, that short little blonde woman? Forget her, all right? She's just holding my place. So, India, warm up to me because I'm coming. So, that's
what it's
all about.
It's just weird. It's inappropriate, probably. In the grand scheme of things, does it make that big of a difference? Probably not. But it's Kenny. Like,
there is, dare I say, a sort of almost liberal-esque level of arrogance associated with this kind of move, which I know would, like, make people who support the UCP's skin crawl. But there is sort of like a, you know, can only perceived as, he's only doing this because in the future he expects to be the leader of the mm-hmm. province. And I mean, the other part of this too is what actually gets done when a premier, not a member of the national government, makes an international trip? Like, you see Rachel Notley go down to the United States and advocate and lobby on behalf of pipelines, for mm-hmm. example.
Yeah.
And that's because the U.S. is such a close trading partner, and that there was already a free trade agreement in in place. You could see how it would make sense, particularly for a country like Canada or a province like Alberta, to lobby for that sort of investment or, you know, environmental protection changes to have a pipeline built through the United States. I mean, Alberta's really far away from India. Not to say that there isn't value in engaging it, but mm-hmm. what is the real... Even if this was a premier's trip, and Jason Kenney was premier, I think the value is oftentimes much more overstated. That's always been my impression.
Yeah.
I mean, ultimately, what's relationships forged are coming at a national level, or are business interests amongst, you know, like-minded individuals or people with dual citizenship, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Can a premier work to facilitate that? Absolutely. But it's not, I don't think it's, like, top of mind for Albertans or any citizen from every province. The expectation is that that is one of the main duties of the premier. It might be something that they're expected to do, but not necessarily a main duty.
Can you imagine if we had a, you know, the G20 or G7 summits? Yeah, we have the prime minister, the president of every country, and then the regional and the governors of every 50 states of America, and the premiers of Alberta, and the administrators of all the autonomous regions of every country that's a member. I mean, it gets quite crowded. You're right, Ellie. There is a spot, I think, for provincial, state, regional leaders to engage with the larger global community, but usually it's left for the national leader.
I would think so. Side of this is like, well, Don Iveson's now a leader of federations of mayors and has done some around climate change, and you see governor. Premier partnerships, and
but it's not we like have Jason sister cities sitting on an international whatever committee of who that like I don't know yeah, like
it is it was I don't know it was just a bit
it was just weird
it was
and
weird,
lame
it
seemed, and whatever
yeah I mean I think is it are we making too are we even talking about well, this are we making
I guess
too much
the,
out
the
of
other
it?
Question would be what if this was the other way around you know
yeah.
and you know he's in
if
government
Rachel Notley,
and Rachel Notley as leader of the official opposition goes and meets with a foreign, you know, with foreign officials. How does he react? You know, and I mentioned up the top the sort of hypocrisy that we see not only with the UCP, but, you know, generally in with opposition parties who do this kind of thing. How do you think the UCP would have reacted? They would have made probably a big deal out of this. You know, we're saying it's not a big deal, but don't you think they would have made a big deal
probably.
Out of it? Yeah. So he's come back. He's got his dose of Indian culture, and now he's going to really shake.
Did you say dosa of Indian
his
culture?
His dose.
I also thought he was making it was a pun.
No.
I love a good dosa.
Oh, when I lived in Vancouver, there was an awesome dosa place across the street that I used to go to, and it was open 24/7.
What? Sounds great.
So Elliot, of course, before we close this off, as part of the.
We're not going to close on DOSA?
Well, I was going to say, as part of the...
I thought DOSA was a great place to end.
As part of the UCP War Room, you know, and we've asked you several times, but he hasn't actually told us. What was your favorite part of India?
Michael, I didn't get to go to India. I'm too busy preparing for the next upcoming election.
Right, I see. Oh, I see.
And preparing policy to end the job-killing carbon tax... And get Albertans back to work.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
I'm glad to see you were working. Very good. Got 10 minutes and $100? Start planning your future with atbprosper.com. It's simple, easy, and built for you. The best parts? It's all online. There's a Prosper bonus, and there are ATB pros around to help if you want it. atbprosper.com. Check it out. From Alberta to East and Quebec. And
Vive Quebec!
Yes, La Belle Provence is having a election on October the 1st. And of course, we've often said that elections are Olympics. Very interesting times, you know, in the political world. And Quebec is always interesting. Quebec politics is always fascinating. So we're just going to run through, you know, some of the highlights of this Quebec election, which is now 2 weeks away. And, you know, with any election, there's always two or, you know, three issues that really dominate the discourse, or sometimes it's only one. Sometimes it's, you know, that ballot box question. And this time around, it really, in Quebec, it really seems to be centering around immigration.
What?
And and the French language, right? So it's kind of tied together. Now, Quebec is the only province which really has a say in its levels of immigrants that are allowed into the province. Of course, one of many concessions that has been given to Quebec in the Canadian Federation over, you know, over its history, of course, as a distinct society. So it does control its number of immigrants in the province. And now this campaign, one of the key issues really has come about is, should Quebec maintain its current level of refugees, of immigrants that are coming into the province, or should it be lessened? And of the immigrants that are coming in, how important should learning the French language be to them? Obviously, French is the official language of Quebec, and French is obviously an integral part of their society. So some politicians are saying that it is integral to protect the French language that immigrants master it over English. If you're coming to Quebec, then you should learn French. So this has been a major bone of contention in this election. So we have the Liberal Party.
Sorry, Mike, I have a question. So was this always a ballot box question going into this election? Was this always the number one
thing? I think it was made that way because of statements by one particular leader, and I'll get into that right away. No, I don't think it started that way, but it has become all certainly the hot button issue. So the government is the Liberal Party. Philippe Couillard is the premier, the leader, and they've let in, I think, about 40,000 immigrants so far since Canada has opened up its borders, especially to many of the Syrian refugees. And his main opposition is a man named François Legault, and he's part of a party called the CAQ, Coalition Avenir Québec, Coalition for Quebec's Future. They are a conservative party. And it's François Legault who's really kicked off this immigration debate in Quebec, because he said that if elected, he wants to lower the number of immigrants that come into Quebec by some 20%. Not only that, they will be required to master French language at an adequate level within 3 years of arriving in Quebec. And if they don't pass a French competency exam or a Quebec values exam, then they will be subject to being kicked out of Quebec, basically.
So is there a language test and a values test?
Kind of tied together.
Okay.
So, yeah, well, I'm not sure if it's two separate tests or if it's one tied together.
It probably hasn't been thought out.
Right.
Like that.
So François Legault, the leader of the Conservative Party, CAQ, brings this forward. And that's really, ignited this debate about immigration in Quebec. So the race is between the Liberals and the CAQ. And, of course, we can't forget trailing in third is the Parti Québécois, the sovereigntist party of Quebec, which is also, besides promoting Quebec independence, is a leftist party. And we know from the past that they've introduced things such as the Charter of Quebec Rights, Quebec Values a few years ago. They wanted to get rid of religious symbols. So it's...
Yeah, that went over really well.
Yeah. So this is... it's a complex debate. There's many issues in Quebec, obviously economy, transportation, but this immigration thing has really ignited. And for a long period, the CAQ, François Legault's party, was leading in the polls.
And still are.
Yeah.
Though they have dropped in
the
recent...
That's right. Until recently. Ways. Now it has become more of a closer two-horse race between the Liberals and the CAQ. But I guess the question is, did François Legault touch on something when he, suggested that maybe he'll kick out immigrants if they don't pass a French test?
I mean, I think the answer to that question is yes. He has touched something and has excited Quebecers, I think, in a number of different ways. I think clearly there is some appetite in Quebec to bring down immigration numbers, to re-solidify Quebec as a French place. And those are existing sentiments that go back to the foundation of Quebec itself. And
Sharon,
I think that
doesn't understand.
Is Quebec going to get some border patrol and start, going to people and snatching them up?
Well, that's the interesting question, because then there's, a pushback to where it's like, well, we're actually going to push the federal government not to do this and blah, 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 right? Because there is, federalism, God. And that's a whole other issue around that. I think it's interesting that in at least the last round of polling, the CAQ have actually dropped off as these comments have sort of been questioned. And questions like Sharon asked about some of the more specifics of the language policy have been asked, whether it be in debates or in news media, people looking for direct answers to these things. And there being, I think, a lack of actual details, which is often...
Well, it sounds like he made it up off the top of his head during whatever it was, a debate.
Well, he's made a number of gaffes the last few days where he's blundered on, follow-up questions. Like,
what
the
happens
kinds
when
of, like, Sharon has.
You make up a policy on the spot.
Yeah.
Well, or
you
make up a policy
promise
that will entice people with, if you don't provide any details, but will start to scare people once you do.
Yeah.
Right? Like, it was always reform the immigration system and build the wall, and Mexico's going to pay for it. And they never went any further than that in the United States with regards to describing how this was actually going to happen. And you've seen, as implementation around border laws has changed, support for those kinds of policies have dropped out and fallen out. Because I think that there is lots to be said for exciting people about their frustrations in their society. But when you start getting down to details, people finding out about that, the horrific sort of undertones of those sorts of policies start to come to the forefront. And I think that that's kind of what's going on here. But Quebec is an interesting place, and there's almost sort of groups of individuals that you have to sway in order to win elections. It's interesting, the poll track, the CBC poll tracker has Quebec, Greater Montreal, Quebec region, but then it's also got Francophones and non-Francophones. Yes, so how do your policies associate in those sorts of areas as well, too? And I think that that's an interesting facet of this as well, because there are interesting dynamics when you're dealing with the Anglophone community versus
absolutely. You know, the other day, for the first time in Quebec history, they had an English language debate in a campaign. And, you know, for some, they were saying, well, it's about time, you know. But for others, it was an assault on Quebec's identity. Why do we need an English language debate in a Quebec campaign? And I think François Legault's, you know, his mandate to you have to learn French or leave, isn't that targeting the Francophone voters?
Absolutely. And you see why he's had so much, you know, when you look at how Francophones break down, like you're looking at over 40% of support, although that's dropped off in the last couple of days, but over 40% support in that specific area. I think what's also interesting about this race is that this is the only way in which the CAQ has been able to gain momentum in this race, because for all intents and purposes, the economy in Quebec is doing very well now. There's a general sense that people are secure and that the province is on the right track. It's just this question about immigration that has really enticed the population. And it speaks to, I think, some of the reasons why the NDP federally have had issues in Quebec recently. And this is a racial question hidden in a blanket of language politics. Yes. And I think that that's really clearly coming through in this conversation and in this election campaign.
Yeah. I also think we should also note how, you know, the CAQ, the CAQ, is a new party. It was only formed in 2012. And, of course, we have the Liberals. And the Parti Québécois, the once mighty Parti Québécois, like the Bloc Québécois, has really fallen behind. Now, they have come up a little bit in the last few days. But, you know, what was once considered, you know, the natural governing party, sort of Quebec, and they did dominate the last 30 years or so, are now trailing behind. And again, I think Quebecers, Francophones, Anglophones, whatever, you know, all stripes of Quebecers are really moving away from the idea of this sovereign country. And it's interesting because the CAQ...
Well, they just rather be quietly sovereign.
Yeah, well, yeah, not necessarily like a political entity. Like the CAQ has in its constitution that they are Quebec nationalists. So, yeah, they're going to promote Quebec's interests as aggressively as the PQ will promote Quebec's interests, except they're going to do it within Canada, where the PQ is obviously, we have to be outside of Canada. So, and so it's interesting to see, really, that idea of a separate Quebec is really waning, and there we have the PQ again in third place, unlikely to obviously win, and probably would not be the official opposition either. They'd be the third party.
Yeah, I think, you know, that looks to be the way the polls are trending. I do think it's important to note, Michael, though, that in this recent drop, and every time the CAQ has dropped in the polls, there have been gains for the Liberals, but there also has been gains for the PCs. So there are people obviously out there who sort of see the CAQ and the PQ, sorry, not the PCs, the PQ as the Quebec party, and they have similarities in the vision of Quebec and in a unified Quebec and a separate Quebec. Whether that's there's obviously a disagreement about whether that they're a separate country or not, and that's a whole other dynamic. But there are certainly people that there's a majority, I think, of Quebecers that see a unified Quebec in the CAQ policy and the PQ policy, and that still exists too. So I've been saying for 3 years on the show that separatism is dead. Perhaps it's not dead. Perhaps it's just morphed a little bit into a new form of exclusion.
Yeah, that's a very good point, Ellen. Yeah, and let's also mention that beyond the nationalist platform, CAQ is conservative, and the PQ is center, you know, not socialist, but a leftist center-left party, and the liberals, you know, sometimes right, sometimes left, in the middle. So if you want to look at it from that perspective, there you have the ideologies for you. But certainly interesting, October the 1st is the election in Quebec, so that's 2 weeks. Polls are obviously going to change day by day, but as of now, September 19th, CAQ, CAC, is expected to win.
I wonder if we'd pass the values test.
I wouldn't, not in Quebec.
Sharon probably, for sure wouldn't.
I would fail both of them, language and values.
The Alberta Podcast Network is excited to announce a new affiliate podcast, Otherwise. Otherwise is a variety podcast dedicated to empowering diverse communities living on Treaty 6 territory by sharing stories of their lived experiences. If you'd like to learn more about the show, visit otherwiseshow.com. And as it launches at the end of September, you can go and subscribe and listen. Otherwiseshow.com.
All right. I can't believe I have to do this again, but...
Well, you did well last time.
Thank you, Michael. It's very nerve-wracking. Can't live up to your standards. And of course, we were talking about some of the most dark times of our show. It's now time for...
Trump Watch.
All right, so if anyone has been following the news, which I hope you do, or maybe you just listen to our podcast.
High Level Showdown once a week. That's the only news you get. That's fine. We're good with it.
There's been lots of talks about tariffs. We know last week that Trump hit China with another billions of dollars tariffs, and China retaliated with Trump. And this is an ongoing tariff war that Trump and China have been in for quite a while, and that's been dominating the news cycle. It's a big deal. Everyone's wondering, oh my goodness, when will this tariff war end? But as always on the High Level Showdown, we like to talk about things that people aren't hitting on. And so the thing related to tariffs, that is our Trump Watch this week, is that the Trump administration actually has issued $6 billion bailout to farms in the United States because they have been detrimentally hit by the tariffs. And so this has mostly affected soybean farmers, but other farms have been hit. So dairy producers, pork producers, I think even like grain producers, you know, this is $6 billion in bailout. And they said this will consist of $4.7 billion in payments. They're actually going to pay $100.2 billion to the farms to buy the surplus in commodities that these farms are producing because, you know, no one is buying them because they're such high tariffs. And Trump, after China's retaliatory tariffs last week, said that they're still going to go ahead with increasing tariffs from 10% right now to 25% in January. So while Trump is going around talking about how they're so tough on China and how China has been mistreating America, actually the American people, the hardworking farmers, are actually the ones who are facing the brunt of Trump's policies.
You know what's interesting about this?
Wait, so are you saying he's hurting America?
Yes.
Are you saying that?
He really is.
It's short-term pain for long-term gain,
I see.
Michael.
Okay.
And just an end note, the farmers are actually saying, okay, fine, whatever, a bailout, but this isn't a long-term solution. The farmers want to be producing at a sustainable rate. They want people to be buying their products overseas, and that's not going to happen with the rate that Trump is going with his tariffs.
So what's interesting about this is that this is a tactic by the Chinese government, because they know that a large portion of Trump's support, and largely the reason why he won the election, was support in rural areas around the country, but particularly in the Northeast, where a number of these farm subsidies are going to have to come into place, because those are the types of farmers that are getting hurt by these tariffs.
In the Midwest.
In the Midwest, I guess, too. In the Mideast. A little bit more in the Midwest, I guess. But whatever. Anyway. There's a political side to this as well, too. And then Trump's had to placate them. But what you're hearing more and more out of the states are farmers frustrated by this and see this bailout as a type of welfare, a welfare that they don't need. Mm-hmm. And what people don't really understand is that America is actually one of the largest agricultural producers in the world. It's one of their most successful industries. They produce much more than any other country at a much more efficient pace and at a much higher quality. And people want to buy American agriculture. America feeds a lot of the world because of that.
The standards are really high.
There's huge benefits around this. And part of the trade deficit total that Trump seems to hate and not understand is that American products are so good that at times people want to buy them. And it gets confusing because then that allows for more imported products to be brought in to support their agriculture and other industries, their high-tech industries, right? This is all complex.
What, the issue is nuanced?
Yeah, the issue is nuanced. And the issue is nuanced. Yeah. And so, although there's a lot of agriculture going out, there's more need for lower-tech. Anyway, it's confusing, but... Yeah. It's been really interesting to see farmers sort of start to turn and a farm lobby start to turn against Republicans and against the president, particularly on this issue, to the point now where in a lot of these House races and state House races, Democrats are using farmers as spokespeople for their candidacy, saying that they're going to get rid of these tariffs and I'm going to be able to do my job. And there's a lot of pride and sort of inherent value in the work of a farmer it's a bit like how we always talk in communications about how you always trust a police officer, a nurse, or a school teacher. In America, you might even add a farmer to that
it's a noble work with their hands.
We built this country. We feed the pioneers.
Well, I mean, slaves built the country.
They did farm work.
Yes, noble farm work the slaves were doing. Jesus.
So there is, I think that this is starting to turn hearts and minds and frustrate one farmers, but also start having major impacts on an upcoming election that's
going to be really interesting.
Well, it's now 50 days. We're 50 days till the midterm.
Either the most joyous day or the saddest day. I think that's a really good point, Elliot, where it's going to be interesting to see how the Republicans and the people in Congress and in Senate respond to this as we get closer to this. Will Trump start seeing pushback? Is he already that we're not hearing about of, you know, senators, governors, and people, you know, on the ground saying, hey, man, like these tariffs are hurting us. We haven't really seen that much of it, but I just don't know if that's because of the nature of the American political news cycle. But it is going to be interesting to see how this affects Republicans on the ground, because we know it's already sort of a slippery slope, and these are, as you were saying, a lot of areas where it was guaranteed that Trump would probably get a win again just because of the nature of who was voting for him.
And is the reason why he won. I mean, the other thing, too, is that United States and Donald Trump has considerable leverage over a country like Canada. We're the closest neighbor. They have so much more of a larger population. They have a much larger economy. There are certain levers that Donald Trump and the Americans can pull that impact Canada, and there is considerable leverage. I think we're seeing that in NAFTA negotiations now. China's a huge economy.
They don't care.
In the grand scheme of things, 250 million, like whatever, 250 billion, well, whatever it is, like they don't really care, right?
I mean, it's just comparable the way the rest of the world is dependent on China and what China produces, right? It's not like Canada, where it's like, obviously we have great trade partners and great, you know, exports and things like that, but not in the same way, like you're saying, as China.
doesn't necessarily need the United States.
No, not at all.
No, and they know it. And Xi Jinping knows it, right?
And they've done a they've done this masterful job of sort of just being like, so what? We'll take you on because they can take the brunt just as much as the American government. And we've known this for 10 years. We put together as a Pacific trade partnership. There were major issues with China. China is a trade cheat. Everyone knows that. Everyone's talked about that. It's totally right. So what did all the Pacific countries get together and do? They came together and created a partnership, the TPP, which was in large parts meant to take on China and take on China's bad behavior in the international arena. What was the first thing Trump did when he got into power?
Got rid of
TPP. Hey. So now they're fighting this battle on their own against China. And I say, look, you're going to lose it. Yeah. Like, I don't think
they are going to lose.
If you could come together and you have all of, you know, you have a Japan, you have a Canada, you have a Mexico, you have the Koreas, you have one Korea, I guess, not both of them, but engaged in a partnership that is meant to put pressure on China to act in a way that, you know, respects copyright law, that, you know, doesn't modify its currency or, you know, unfairly modify the price of its currency, then you start to be able to make changes.
Well, that's the benefit of relationships, right? In these partners.
And free trade!
Yeah.
Anyway, sorry.
You know, it's just interesting that every time we go over something that Trump has been doing, and it's just a reaffirmation of this man's ignorance.
Ignorance is just like
He doesn't get it. He doesn't even understand. Even though he obviously thinks he's the greatest negotiator in the world.
I just think Trump likes to look like he's being tough on something, right? So tariffs is a really way to say, being tough on Canada, too. Canada has treated us badly. China has treated us badly. All these people have treated us badly, so this is what happens. And yeah, it's not saying, like you said, Elliot, that China is perfect or that these things aren't unfair, that, you know, supply chain management is kind bullshit.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's...
Whoa, Maxime Bernier's in the room. Whoa!
It's kind
Maxime,
of...
Maxime, is that you?
I mean, like, we kind of manipulate
the
market.
Elliot is a Sharon, not represent the other hosts.
I support actually Canadian dairy farmers.
Why do you hate dairy farmers?
Are you not recruiting for the People's Party of Canada?
I support Canadian dairy farmers.
I hear she's running for Edmonton Centre nomination. People's Party of Canada.
But this is what the give and take is, guys. Okay, the give and take, the partnership. So
something you changed after you got married.
That's right.
I don't. Please, everyone. These are not my views. So what do you think is going to happen here with the tariffs, right? I mean, right now Trump is fighting this big trade war with all these different countries. You have NAFTA going on. You have this tariff thing with China. How long do you think it will last before, you know, he sees that blowback?
He's banking that others are going to blink first, right? And I think a lot of they're showing that they're going to play his game, as we said, amongst them China.
Like he's... I mean, China says they're willing to come to the table and negotiate, right?
Yeah.
I think there has been considerable negotiations going on, but there is...
But at the same time, Trump keeps raising the tariffs.
Well, there's bad blood and bad faith, and I don't think I don't think China's in any position to need to compromise, and therefore...
25% in January.
Yeah, and...
What's going to happen then?
But I'll tell you what happens before that, which is a major election in the United States that will potentially flip the House, less likely that they'll flip the Senate, but that will create a new political pressure on the president. And I don't think that you know, there's this great quote from The West Wing where Josh Lyman looks at Toby Ziegler and says, I don't know how many more fronts we can fight this on. And they're talking about fighting, having to take on their own party to try and get a deal done at one point. And I think that what you're going to see, particularly if there is a landslide towards the Democrats, or even not even a landslide, but the Democrats do take back the House, I think what you're going to see is that the Trump's administration have to sort of consolidate where their fights are going to be. And if it doesn't look like there is a really positive outcome coming with regards to China, and I don't think that there's anything clearly happening for a bit, they might have to roll back some of these fights, because ultimately how Trump's going to try and secure popularity and secure power and start working towards his 2020 re-election bid is coming out with deals which he can claim he won. He wants a NAFTA deal in which he's made it better for America. He wants a deal with China that will make it look better he made it better for America. If he can't get that, then this is just going to continue, but probably in a scaled back, and we're just not going to hear about it anymore.
Yeah.
There's also an added aspect of this, and it's, you know, the economy worldwide, but particularly Western economies right now, are roaring hot. There is lots of interest in there's lots of investment. People are getting jobs. People are things are going well. The stock market's strong, although that only benefits a certain subset of the population. Wages have remained stagnant, though, in the United States. And I think that if you do see any sort of economic drop-off, what's going to compound that economic drop-off are these tariffs and the impact that they're having at the sticker shock that they bring to Americans in the United States, but also the impact that they're going to have in factories and in manufacturing plants and with farmers, and not just, you know, mom and pop shops, but big pharma.
Yeah.
And they're not big pharma, big farms. and the impact that they have there as well.
Different type of farm.
You ever seen those commercials? I think it's Insurance of America. We are farmers. Dun, 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 dun. You ever
yes,
seen that?
Yeah.
So, America. No, I'm just saying.
Excellent point.
But I mean to say, going back to that point you mean, you know, about that farm tradition, the Americana of the farmers. You know? The College of Farmers.
The other one that you see all the time too is the, what's the insurance company for the veterans insurance company?
Oh. Yeah.
Sharon, you live there.
I am. Yeah, you,
come on.
I didn't grow up with TV.
Yes, that's true. They didn't have an ad in the New York Times?
No. 780.
Elliot?
So I'm gonna go out of the city.
No, I do.
I'm gonna go out of the city though. I am really enjoying this Netflix show that I think has been out for a while. My sister told me about it. Shout out to Nina, longtime listener.
Hey, Nina.
Last Chance U.
Yeah, it's great.
So really interesting. Sort of follows a junior college in the southern United States, where that has made a habit and sort of has a philosophy around bringing in NCAA players who have gotten into trouble either with the law or with their grades, and been kicked out of the big schools in the United States. And sort of this is their last chance to try and make that comeback and change their behavior and show that they can still, one, perform, two, be at least good enough in their academics, and three, are going to stay out of trouble. And it's a really interesting way.
These are football players, by the way.
Football players, football players in the United States. It's an interesting comment on the education levels in the NCAA programs, the expectation levels from colleges and specifically big sports colleges, but also how that culture runs deep. And also, it really personalizes stories and shows just what types of pressures these young men are under. For many of them, it's either I make it in football or I'm going to end up in a really negative place back in my home because I was the only one that even had a chance to go out. It's a real interesting social comment on poverty in America as well, too. So I'd really recommend you check out Last Chance U.
Great. Mine is the Edmonton International Film Festival, which will take place September 27th to October 6th this year at Landmark Cinemas at City Center here in Edmonton, of course. Now, it's not TIFF, certainly not, and it's not Cannes or Sundance or any of the other great film festivals, but you know, it is our own festival, and it's hopefully going to get bigger as time goes on. It's been around for about 30 years now, and so it obviously has grown since then, but still small. But every year, you know, at least the years that I've been going, I have seen the growth. So, you know, it's just another testament to Edmonton's arts scene and the growing, community that we have here for these artistic endeavors.
And when is it, Michael?
Again, 27th of September to October 6th. So I will certainly be there checking out a number of films and reviewing them and such. And It's, you know, it's there's international films, there's Canadian films, there's short films, documentary films. So there's a good variety. You can check
I'd like to go.
Yeah, you can check their schedule out online, and I'm sure find scene to you know, to enjoy. There should be something for everybody. One movie that I am particularly interested in seeing is an Italian movie called Dog Man, and set in the south of Italy in the slums of Naples, and it's by a director who I've admired for a little while now, so I'm looking forward specifically to Dog Man and of course a number of other films. So if you like movies, check out the Edmonton Film Festival.
And if you want to see a movie from a country better than Italy, there's a Maltese film, Knock Me Up or Knock Me
Down.
And people are now going to go to their maps and Malta. What is that's a country?
Likely to be best in show.
That exists? Okay. Malta exists?
Best country,
I love
best
how
film.
Quick you went to look that up. If there's any Maltese films. Oh my goodness, this rivalry. All right, so my 780 this week actually goes to City Councilor Sarah Hamilton. This week, who had a passionate address to council, really pushing them to pass Edmonton's Access Without Fear policy. And this is for people who are undocumented, who are living in Edmonton, giving them the hope and, you know, dissuading their fear that when they access, you know, different city services, different recreational facilities, maybe when they have run-ins with bylaws or peace officers, that they won't be at risk of being asked for their immigration documents and being deported. This was a rousing debate in council this week, and Sarah Hamilton, even though it did pass with a majority, there were three councillors who voted against this bill. So shame to Mike Nichol, Tony Katarina, and John Zidziak, who made very uninformed comments about, you know, undocumented immigrants and what would happen if we pass this. And so shout out to Sarah and the rest of council. I very personally know what it's like to live in a country for many years and fall out of the system, as my family had a similar experience living in the United States. And just knowing, having that ease, knowing that, you know, you can access services and live a normal life like any other citizen without fear of being deported or having your immigration called into question is fantastic. So shout out to Sarah Hamilton. Shame again to Tony Katarina, John Zidziak, and Mike Nichol.
One of those is my council.
Yeah, exactly. And I hope to see more compassionate things happening in city council like this one.
All right. Well, awesome point. Well made. I think that's it, everybody.
No, we have a poll! You always forget the poll!
Yeah, that's 2 weeks now that you've right. nearly...
So, we had a poll last week. No one cares about Jagmeet Singh because poll number has really dropped this week.
Lucky so number sad. 13. Yeah.
Yeah, so no one seemed to really care, which I don't know if this is a good sign or a bad sign.
But the winning or the majority response is
so
interesting.
Sad. So we asked, how long will Jagmeet Singh continue in his role as NDP leader? 15%, only 15% thought it would be beyond the 2019 election. 31% said only up to the 2019 election. And 54%, the majority, said Jagmeet Singh will be sayonara before 2019 election.
Well, and you know, we did talk about his upcoming
by-election
win. You know, I really think that if he doesn't win that by-election, that could be a killer right there.
Trudeau hasn't called the date, right?
I don't believe so.
Yeah. Oh, you guys, he's going to go beyond 2019. The 15% of you out there, I'm with you.
He's going to go beyond 2019?
Yes.
We'll see.
Beyond the election?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I don't think so.
I hope so.
I would say up until the election, Woof. But...
Of little faith, I believe in Jagmeet. I'm going to go door knocking for him.
All right, calm down.
I'm moving to Vancouver for 3 months.
Guys, until next week, if you're mad at us, particularly about Sharon's comments about supply management and how she hates dairy farmers. Sharon.
Or Elliot saying slaves were just hardworking farmers.
I didn't say that.
You can find me at Sharon MV.
I just noted that they were on the farm.
If you want to throw shade at Elliot with me, hit me up. Michael, yes, where can I'm people find you? I'm at Maestro
Michael 2 on Twitter.
I'm at Tanti Yank. That is...
And you can find the show at High Level Show.
Yes, see, and on iTunes, of course.
Yes.
And on Spotify.
Yes.
See you next week.